September 27th, 2022, Ward Green here, 1447 hours. This is Proverbs 27. Little children, let's pray. Jehovah, help us to listen and absorb the information and to retain it in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm trying to see. I need to get the light correct here, first of all. There's something going on. Oh, yeah. I think I can get more light. I can get more light. Possibly here. Let's see. Uh-oh. Yeah, okay.
Un momento. I looked that up and I found out. Yeah. The correct phrase is un momento. I learned. So let's see if we can do this now. Yeah, it works now. Okay. I need to boot to a brighter screen here in my other device. Okay. Good. So yesterday we talked about, in a moment we're going to read Proverbs, but yesterday we talked about, or I explained how I had installed DOSBox, and I realized after that, after I talked about that and made that video, I realized that I didn't need to install two instances of it, because I, in my command file, for the second program, I invoked the other preferences file. So you can just invoke the same instance of the DOSBox program every time, as long as you tell it to open a new window using the dash N, open dash, open space dash N space. And then you give the rest of the command, and then you give, well, you tell it what program to open, first of all, you know, which is the DOSBox program, and the app, that is, the .app file, which is the path to that file, then the name of that file, DOSBox-X.app, I think it is, and then you specify, just, I'm booting Windows here, Windows XP, here we go, so, and then you specify the that you're going to add some arguments using the double dash args switch. Then you put a space and you put dash conf, which is the configuration file destination or path, and then you put space and then the path for the for that file. And that's how you open another instance, because it's a new window, plus you've specified a different configuration file. If you want to, you can specify whichever configuration file you've created. So you can create a new file with the particulars that you want for that program, such as you could specify different window parameters. And when I talked about that, I just remembered another thing, and I thought of it yesterday. I didn't explain how I got the window to be the size it is. I had to find the right parameters for one of the specifications is a certain variable in the configuration file, which you have to specify as a specific, there we go. You have to specify it as a specific value. So it's like open GLPP, I think it is, or something like that. It's you specify. Let me open that file. I want to talk about that. Plus, notice in the Bible in Basic English, Luke 1:24 says, after that time, Elizabeth, being certain that she was to become a mother. Kept herself from men's eyes for 5 months. That's interesting, isn't it? Because it implies that being certain she was to become a mother could have occurred, or more likely would occur after the 5 months, when she was aware that she was pregnant for sure. Because after 5 months, it would be visible. And, I mean, before the 5 months, it's not very obvious. Certainly not to other people, but even to the mother herself, if she doesn't believe she can get pregnant, then it's not obvious to her either. So that's an interesting translation. It says, being certain that she was to become a mother at that point would imply that's after the 5 months. Very interesting. So it's not clear, based on the context, it's not clear that she was certain before the 5 months began, but it would be more truthful or more obviously true that she would be certain after the 5 months. It's a very interesting translation. Of Luke 1:24, it's the Bible in basic English. So I came back, and so I found that later on after my other discussion about Luke chapter 1 and how it's very probable from the evidence, or I don't know how to say it. I mean, it's not a probability issue, but it looks to be verified. Yeah, the chronology looks to be verified by Luke chapter 1. That's what I was talking about, right? The chronology of Jesus having been born in the year 6 BCE, or BCE 6, as they sometimes say, rather than some other time. Because that, in the year 6 BCE, there was Zechariah's appearance at the temple. Looks like it coincides with, in at least, it's possible to see it as coinciding very exactly with the Passover. So, and that would be consistent with that chapter where there were people at the temple in multitudes, a multitude of people. But I've talked about that before. I'm not intending to go into that in detail right now because I've already talked about it. But what was I going to talk about here? Oh, yeah. So let's see. In the MacBook Pro SSD, which is your internal, obviously it's your internal drive, but it's called MacBook Pro SSD. It's the internal drive of the MacBook Pro. Mine is an M1 MacBook Pro, which is, it's Apple Silicon, of course. Now I'm going to look for, in the we have to go to Shift Command Period. That opens up all the hidden files. Then we go to Library. We scroll down to Preferences, and in that folder, Preferences, we go to the end of that. We see the two DOSBox preferences. Okay, let's look at the second one. No, the first one. Doesn't matter. They're both the same as far as the video. So when we look at them, when we look at either of those, we go back, scroll back to the video section, and it's called SDL, I think, or something. If we get back there, we'll see what it's called. It's some of the file is high. It's in my MacVim I use, my editor. It's got highlights for the headings of each section. So DOSBox, it's one of the headings. So here it is. SDL is one of the headings in square brackets. SDL, which has to do with the graphical interface, I understand. I forget or never knew what it stands for. What is SDL? Let's look it up. Let's look up SDL. Simple Direct Media Layer. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Simple Direct Media Layer. So it's got to do with, the it says it's a cross-platform library, for multimedia, so that you can interface one system with another. In other words, so the Windows that I'm running, or the DOS, the version that I'm running DOS, not Windows.
the DOS box, which runs DOS on an Apple Silicon, on a Mac OS, Apple Silicon device running Mac OS, I'm running DOS in DOS box, and that's amazing. But this enables us to make the translation between DOS and the Mac OS. It's the SDL layer, apparently. It's simple direct media layer. But if I look at the SDL section of the configuration file in the preferences folder, like I said, it says there's full screen, false. You can go full screen, too. That's right. There's a full screen option if you go Command F. Is that what it is? Let's run the program. Let's take our time. I don't plan to make a long video today, but you never know. But if I do this, okay, I've opened my Bible application. Now, if I go, is it Command F? What is it? I think it might be. It's either Command F or Shift Command F. Or it's something. Maybe it's not Command F. No, it's not Command F. Okay. Oh, it's F12. F12F. Yeah. You have to push F12 and then press F. Now, if you hold down F12 and press F again, nothing happens. So you have to let go of both keys, then press F12 and F again, and then it will resize back to the small size. So you can go full screen by F12F. But that actually doesn't change it in the way I've got it. It's already maxed out. So it just makes everything else disappear. But if you have a small version, a very tiny, if it pops up as a very small screen, this maximization using F12F will make it full screen, and it will fill the screen. I had it doing that. But now I have the video working in the way I do now, which is in some ways it's far superior because it opens sort of large size, first of all. It's not full screen, but it opens large size. And I've got it done using output. The output equals open GLPP. Is that what I said before? I think it was, yeah. No, it was something. No, it was something else, I think I said. I forget what I said, but anyway, it should be open GLPP is what it should say. That's to get scaling. But if you Google DOSBox-X, how to get scaling of the graphics, you'll find that, how to do that. If I scroll down to the next section in the configuration file, the second next section, actually, the one after the next section, you can enter in there things like aspect equals true, double scan equals false. Those, I think, were ideas that were given to me from the same instruction sheet or the file online that told me how to set up the scaling. But it's just something you need to play around with, and you Google it and you find out what they say and you try them, and you find out if it works on your system. It took me a fair number of probably a couple of hours before I got this thing working. But my scaler equals, the scaler variable equals normal 3 times. So it's 3 times normal size. That's another way that I get it large. If I go back again to the previous section, two sections prior to that, where I was talking about full screen and things like that, those variables, the output equals open GLPP. In that section, I set full resolution as 1920 by 1920. And I set window resolution as 1440 by 1220. That's how I got it to fit. That's how I got the application to fit exactly in the window without any black space around it. So it opens in a window without any black space. And I had to use, I don't know which of these things, the 1220 was critical. I needed the 1220 with the 1440. I needed 1220 because it didn't work. If it wasn't 1220, if it was bigger than 1220, it would have black space. These dimensions probably, these numbers possibly are important. Not all of them may be critical, but full resolution of 1920. The thing is, of 1920 by 1920, which I don't know if that's important either, but when I look at, it might have to do with the window size, but it's not clear. And that might give us our full window size. I could go back and experiment with it right now and see, but I've got it working, so I don't care. But the 640 is what, 640 by 480 was what the DOS program was. So it's only got 640 by 480, but when you put it in 1920 by 1920 resolution, it looks
stunning, even though it's still jagged because it's using 640 by 480 as the internal resolution of the text. It's got jaggies on the text, but it's still, the picture is absolutely spectacularly clear and crisp. The jaggedness is crisp and clear. So it's, but it's a beautiful looking display of that program. So I mean, it's more, there was more work than I actually said. It's harder than it, than I actually said, because, and I've got a lot of experience doing it, doing programming, doing, I've done a lot of debugging of programs, and I've, so I mean, I shouldn't say a lot, not, I'm not a computer person, so I mean, I don't do as much as a lot of people do who are involved with computer programming as a full-time job, but I mean, I've done a lot of computer programming and, or debugging, I should say, of my own things, of my own, during the time when I do set things up, I typically have to debug a lot of things. I'm used to doing, that's what I'm saying. I'm not afraid to do debugging. It doesn't mean I've done a lot of it. But it, so it will take me longer than someone else too, who's got a lot more experience. But I got all of this set up in one day when I started working. It was very easy to get. It seems in retrospect it was very easy, but at the time I was completely lost, not knowing how to do it. But, you know, Google helped give me some ideas. I had to figure out that the SDL was the version 2 of SDL was the one I wanted. That I was trying SDL without the 2 at the end. That folder was failing every time. I tried a lot of things with that to see if I could get the app centered in the window, but the app kept appearing to the upper right, and I could only see the lower corner of the app in the window, so it kept failing to center it. And so finally I realized, well, wait a minute, why don't I try the SDL? I don't know when I realized that, but I finally realized I got to try the SDL version and see if that worked, and it worked instantly. Oh, that's right. When I was trying the original one, there was one occasion where it opened up, the app opened on my laptop instead of opening on my other monitor. And when it opened on my laptop, it worked perfectly. It was centered and everything. So I knew it was possible that it could center if I could get it to open on my other monitor. But as soon as I dragged it to the external monitor, it failed. It went off again to the upper right where I couldn't see it anymore. Couldn't see the whole window. I mean, the window was there, same size, but the application had been shifted up to the upper right where you couldn't see the whole page. So that's what happened. And just by dragging it, it shifted. So that really taught me something. Then I realized, okay, yeah, this is, it's only a graphical issue. It's not something else. It's just the graphical difference in the two monitors. That's when I realized the SDL, I should try the other SDL. I think that was shortly after that I realized that. I tried lots of different things. You know, if something doesn't work, you try something different. You know, that's how things work, obviously, right? Even in the creative process. There's not going to be any accident. If you get it working, it's not by accident. It's because you're doing it the right way. But you have to try different things in order to find out what that right way is. And you have to be unafraid to change things. So that's how that went. That was a very interesting experience. I'm kind of excited because now, I guess it takes the reason it took so long after I bought my new laptop in December last year, or in November actually, but I received it in December. The reason it took so long to get these programs installed was because there's no point in installing things early on when you're not even sure. At least it's not a conscious thing. I just think possibly the reason is because subconsciously you know that this new system may not be the one that you end up sticking with. You know, you don't know how long you're going to have it. You don't know how long this new computer is going to last, so you don't want to set up all your programs. But the other thing was, I didn't believe I could do it. And another reason was DOSBox-X. It may have been available back then, I'm not sure. But I wasn't confident that DOSBox-X was going to work as well as it might, because it was fairly new. It was the version of DOSBox designed for my new system, but I wasn't confident that I could use it. So there are a lot of reasons. Look at this. I found my Windows XP installation file. It's in an ISO file. So it's in the format of a .iso file. And that could be installed as though it were like a CD-ROM or something, but I mean, or a DVD. You can install that thing, maybe if you had a way to install it. So that's the thing I'm running on my VirtualBox on my old iMac. So, I mean, when I want to run it. Let's see, what am I saying? No, I'm running it now. Yeah, I'm running it now. That's right. So I'd like to get that running, but that runs in... That's Windows XP. I think we're going to have Windows XP available eventually. It'll be coming. It just takes a few months or years after the release of the Apple Silicon for the people to figure it all out, how to get Windows XP. Because it's not the same as Windows. It's not based on DOS. It's not based on the old Windows, which is based on DOS. It's a system of its own. It does have a form of DOS in it. So, but somebody has ported this DOS box to run Windows XP. As far as I understand it, it's just there seemed to be some uncertainty about it, or it's not quite settled yet. Instead of taking me one day, that might take me 2 days or 3 days, or I might fail, or it might take a week or something. You know, I don't know. I don't know how long it would take, so therefore I'm not willing to put the time into it. I'm not as willing to put the time into it. So there are a lot of things going on like that, right? I mean, I want to go work outdoors, but today looks like it might rain, so I'm not as willing to go out and do it because it might rain. So I figure out, I tend to allocate my time based on, let's see what's going on now. Yeah, it might rain, but it's not for certain. If it hasn't rained it might rain later in the evening, but it could rain any time this afternoon, so it's probably not a good idea to start going out and trying to do things. But also, let's see, what have we got for the daily temperature? It's too warm today, too. It's going to be colder tomorrow. It's just 2 degrees warmer today, supposedly. Tomorrow might be colder, and that's the perfect time to go and do something outside, but that's if I need to. I'm not sure I need to yet. But every day is a lot of planning going on. So, but let's read about this Proverbs 27 now, little children. I like one of the scriptures here particularly, I really like a lot. Let's see if I can get, wait a minute, there's something shining on my eyes here. There. I want to be able to get, I don't know if I can, maybe I can minimize that. Is that better or worse? Let's see what we can do. I got to see. What about that? How about that? That's too dark. What if I do this? It's bright, but it doesn't. It may be okay. If I hold my head up, though, you see it's too many reflections. So let's try. A lot of reflections there. Let's see. Yeah, I'm getting reflections from somewhere. I'm getting a lot of... Oh, it's because it's daytime here. I'm getting reflections from the daylight. That's what it is. That's the issue, I think. Yeah, that's the issue. So anyway, hopefully I can do this. Let's see. I'd be better if I could sit up and look down, perhaps like this. Maybe I should drag the app over here. Now, dragging an app from one window to the other doesn't fail to do that normally. That's only in DOSBox that was happening. That was only because I had the wrong thing set up for DOSBox. Wait, you know what I want to try? I want to try running the Bible app in my main monitor here and then drag it over to the actual... See, it doesn't work. Oh, it doesn't work. on the laptop monitor. Right? That's what it is. So if I want it to work on the laptop monitor, I have to use the other form of it. Oh, not no, now it's failed on both monitors after I drag it. Isn't that interesting? Let's try tab, enter. Doesn't fix it. That's interesting. It fails. So let's try booting it again, see if it works. No. It's not going to work, I don't think, unless I reboot, unless I restart the whole thing. Yeah, it runs it as a different size, and then it makes a lot of problems in the video. It's not right. It's terrible. Anyway, I want to show you just what it... See what it does? It makes a whole bunch... It squashes it, and then it puts some echoes, and then this text is illegible because it's not complete. It's like missing pixels and stuff. So it's just got the wrong resolution, and everything is wrong in that video. So the way to fix it is to escape and then start again and see if it works. Works fine. But let's try dragging it to one of my other monitors. That's what I want to try. So let's drag it up here. Well, it works on the other monitor over here. Okay, works on the right-hand monitor. And I can't drag it up there. Let's see. It should work on the one above. That's maximized, so I can't drag it there. It works on the other Philips, too, the 4K monitor. So it works on all my external monitors, apparently, but I can't do the one above because it's maximized. Okay, now I can drag up there. Yeah, it works there. So it works on all monitors except for my laptop monitor, but it worked on the laptop monitor if I used the other form of the graphic interface for DOSBox, so I can make it work on that monitor if I set up another shortcut that runs off of the other DOSBox form, which is provided. They're both provided in the same folder. Or in there's two subfolders, and you know one is labeled -SDL2. I'm using the SDL2 most of the time. I mean, on these main monitors, anyway. So I won't use that program, I guess, on my laptop. Or if I do, I'll have to change the video format. That's all. So now, if I'm doing this, yeah, I can't read this. If I want to read this, let's see. Can I read it here? This is maybe pretty good. If I lift my head. Yeah, I don't know. I have to drag it down to the bottom so that I keep my reflections off my screen. It's a mess. I think I'll just do it over here, the way we were doing it. Okay, Proverbs 27. Jehovah help us, in Jesus' name. Okay. Do not make your boast about the next day, for you do not know what a day will give birth to. May a stranger and not your own mouth praise you. May a foreigner and not your own lips do so. The heaviness of a stone and a load of sand, but the vexation by someone foolish is heavier than both of them. There is the cruelty of rage, also the flood of anger, but who can stand before jealousy? Better is a revealed reproof than a concealed love. The wounds inflicted by a lover are faithful, but the kisses of a hater are things to be entreated. A soul that is satisfied will tread down comb honey, but to a hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. Just like a bird fleeing away from its nest, so is a man fleeing away from his place. Oil and incense are what make the heart rejoice. Also the sweetness of one's companion due to the counsel of the soul. Do not leave your own companion or the companion of your father, and do not enter the house of your own brother on the day of your disaster. Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far away. Be wise, my son, and make my heart rejoice, that I may make a reply to him that is taunting me. The shrewd one that has seen the calamity has concealed himself. The inexperienced that have passed along have suffered the penalty. Take one's garment, in case one has gone surety for a stranger, and in the instance of a foreign woman, seize from him a pledge.
He that is blessing his fellow man with a loud voice early in the morning, as a malediction, it will be accounted on his part. A leaking roof that drives one away in the day of a steady rain and a contentious wife are comparable. Anyone sheltering her has sheltered the wind, and oil is what his right hand encounters. By iron, iron itself is sharpened. So one man sharpens the face of another. He that is safeguarding the fig tree will himself eat its fruit, and he that is guarding his master will be honored. As in water, face corresponds with face, so the heart of a man with that of a man. Sheol and the place of destruction themselves do not get satisfied. Neither do the eyes of a man get satisfied. The refining pot is for silver, and the furnace is for gold. And an individual is according to his praise. Even if you should pound the foolish one fine with a pestle and a mortar, in among cracked grain, his foolishness will not depart from him. You ought to know positively the appearance of your flock. Set your heart to your droves. For treasure will not be to time indefinite, nor a diadem for all generations. The green grass has departed, and the new grass has appeared, and the vegetation of the mountains has been gathered. The young rams are for your clothing, and the he-goats are the price of the field. And there is a sufficiency of goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and the means of life for your girls. That was Proverbs chapter 27. I want to draw attention to two of those verses that I really find them noteworthy, because they were verses that I could have used earlier in my life probably. One is verse 22, where it says, even if you should pound the foolish one fine with a pestle and a mortar in among cracked grain, his foolishness will not depart from him. It tells you you shouldn't waste your time with foolish people trying to correct them, because it says here, even if you should pound the foolish one fine with a pestle and a mortar. When you pound something into a fine dust, like your dried spice, or what you could pound grain to make flour. You can pound vitamins to make a powder out of it. You could pound different things in a mortar with a pestle. But if you should do that with the foolish one, his foolishness would not depart from him. In other words, there's nothing you can do to cause the foolishness of the foolish one to depart. There's no point in trying. That's a very important scripture, because it will save you a lot of time, which you could spend doing constructive things. Verse 11, be wise, my son, and make my heart rejoice, that I may make a reply to him that is taunting me. That's just remarkable. It's a wonderful scripture, because for somebody who does not have a father, it's especially valuable, or for someone whose father doesn't ever tell him this. For someone who doesn't have a father who does tell him this, which is a very important idea, that the father tells his son, be wise, because the father wants to make a reply to people who are taunting him. And that's, Jehovah can say that to us, even if we don't have a real father on earth. We can have Jehovah, who's a real father in heaven. And that is so very important, to know that there's a reason why you should be wise. That's a very good reason for it right there. It's a reason, if you're looking for a reason, then that's a reason. It's a good reason. But there are many good scriptures in there, many good principles in that chapter. So I think I'll end this video. I know I've rambled a lot about a lot of different unimportant matters to do with my own programming efforts, but if you want to do programming, though, you're going to have to consider the time it takes. It takes a long time. I mean, to set that up for someone who has never done it, that's not something that you can really do. You should try something simpler, first of all, probably. Try something a lot simpler first. Eventually you can do that. And it's not that that was very complex, but that was, for somebody who has no experience with programming, it's still very doable. It's just that it's, when you encounter difficulties, which you inevitably do, knowing how to stay on track and how to keep focused and make progress is hard to do. When you're dealing with a whole new, well, this is Apple Silicon. I'm running DOSBox on Apple Silicon. And before I tried doing this, I didn't even think it was possible. I wasn't even attempting to get these things installed. And then I realized, what happened was I realized, wait a minute. I suddenly realized I was missing this program, NWTIN, stands for New World Translation Insight. I was missing that Bible research program, and I'd always had that before. I was used to being able to use it, and when I wanted to use it, I couldn't use it. And I suddenly realized, well, wait a minute, it's not here. You know, I've been enjoying my Apple Silicon so much, I didn't really miss it. This old program, I didn't miss it too much, but eventually I started to miss it. And as soon as I started to miss having it, and as soon as I became actually aware that I was missing it, then I thought, wait a minute, let me investigate DOSBox again, because I knew I ran it in DOSBox before. That's how I had been running it in High Sierra. Probably I ran it in Sierra too before I got High Sierra, but I was running it on my 2011 iMac in Mac OS High Sierra using DOSBox. So I just had to get the new version of DOSBox to see. So I suddenly realized, well, maybe I can get the new version of DOSBox and maybe it'll work. The only problem was, since I only ever set it up once, I didn't remember much about DOSBox. Didn't know how it worked. You know, I had to learn all that again. I had to learn how I set up the batch files before. Like, I had set up a batch file to change directories, to mount the drive and change directories and run the program. I couldn't do that anymore because in this version of DOSBox, it can't run batch files, apparently. Or I wasn't able to figure out how to do it. But I know how it does it, the autoexecute.bat. I know how it does that. And that's what I needed to do. But it does it using a different method, I believe, from... Let me think now. Wait a minute. Hang on. There's also a folder, right? Yeah. Let's check something out here. It's fascinating to me. Okay, let's check something out here. Let's mount the Z drive, or what do we want to mount? Let's mount Z drive, because Z drive, we don't have to mount it. We just change to the Z drive by saying Z colon enter. Now we say directory dir, which is the DOS command for directory. There's the autoexecute.bat. So I tried to edit this before. We say edit and then autoexecute, autoexec.bat, enter. Oh, there it is. Okay. It's inserted it in there. Right. Okay. So when I did the other batch file, that's fascinating. I had to mount it as a different drive name. I didn't mention that. Okay, so if you're trying to do this, if you've been trying to do this and failing, then this is what you need to do. I'm going to go check this again. My user directory, library, preferences, my DOS application preferences file. Okay, when I open that file, at the end of it, oh no, I mounted it as C. Oh, right. Okay, so I was able to mount it as drive C, so it doesn't matter. I could have mounted it as drive D in one case and drive C in the other for the other program if I wanted to, right? Yeah, right. That's possible too. You could always do different, you know, variations of what I did. But I could have mounted drive C and drive D, actually. Come to think of it. I could set up the auto exec file to
to run both programs every time I click on one icon. I could run both programs. I could do that in the auto exec file. I could set that up, right, easily. All I'd have to do is mount two different drives and then with the appropriate folder, but call it a different drive name and mount the folder that has that program, mounting each one to a different drive name, and then run each program. You know, it's easy, right? It's simple. You change to the drive you want that you've mounted for that program, and then you run the program after changing to that drive. So it says mount C space /volume/ the name of my drive / the folder in which the program is contained, and then next line C:\enter the next line, the name of the program, nwtin.exe, enter. And that's the complete auto exec file, other than the beginning, which sets the blaster, which is audio, I guess. The first line sets the blaster, and it was already, that's not something I did. So what happened is, when I tried to edit the auto exec file, it failed. I tried to edit it using this edit program. Every time I tried to save it, it said it couldn't do it. So when I edited the preferences file, then at the end of that file, it's you go to the end, control end, if you're using McVim, but somehow you get to the end of that file. That's where the auto exec part is. And when you put your auto exec file contents right there under that square bracket, auto exec end square bracket tag, you put your three line, my three lines are right there under there. When I added them there and saved that config file, then they suddenly appeared in the auto exec file automatically. It puts them in the autoexec.bat file, but you can't edit that file directly. I didn't realize it was actually in that file now. Didn't even know that. So that's another thing I just learned. So it's all very interesting. But I mean, you know, it's not worth it to learn everything about DOSBox unless you need to run a program. Obviously, I needed to run this program. In my mind, anyway, I definitely needed to. Let's quit that program. There we go. Where is it? What happened? Okay. Oh, it's all good. It's all good. Everything's here. My windows are there. What's that? Oh yeah. Okay. So, Proverbs, it's wonderful. So, I mean, I'm very happy to... Well, yeah, my health, that's right. I need to update my health a little bit. I need to tell you about my health. My tooth is still good today. Today, I have a little bit of sensitivity in the to do with the sugar, I think. But I didn't eat sugar. I'm not going to eat sugar, but when I took the xylitol gum, I guess that's what caused it. A little bit of sensitivity on that tooth right in the middle of that crown 3-6. But it's gone. Oh, it's not gone. No, it's a little bit sensitive right now today. Yeah. I've never had chewing sensitivity until now. That's a healing signal, though. That could mean it could be bad, or it could be something good. It could be that healing is taking place in that spot, where the crown is going to be, you know, intimately bonded to the tooth material. The living tissue needs to somehow calcify or do something. And that healing, the pain there, slight, a little bit of sensitivity, that can be the brain then sending some help there to heal. It's a healing signal. I'm actually feeling good, though. Right? I had lots of energy. That's why I could read the Proverbs without much difficulty. I don't have too much difficulty reading when I have a lot of energy, because it takes energy to read. There's lots of exciting things. Oh, yes. Okay, my health update is, my lower back pain still is there. I'm not saying I don't have it.
I still can't lie in bed for long periods of time. And it still does exist. I still have lower back pain. It's just not as inflamed. It's not as, you know, not as irritable. I still don't have constipation. I am taking more magnesium than what I thought I was taking now. Wait a minute. I didn't take all my magnesium yet today, though, from yesterday. I still have 5 different capsules left. One of them is 200. Is it? Milligrams of magnesium? Yeah. See, 3 of them are actually 150. No, 4 of them are 150. I have 4 150s and 1 200. That's 600. 800 milligrams that I haven't taken from yesterday. That's a lot that I haven't taken. That would have been what I used to take. But I wouldn't have taken maybe quite all of that, but almost all of that I would have had to take. That's 800 milligrams less magnesium probably it's more like 400 less than what I used to take. And I've got incredibly easy bowel movement today. Like almost, it's almost diarrhea, you know, it's easy. So there's no issue with the constipation, which is phenomenal. My overall health, and that means lower inflammation. Oh yeah, my feet, my toes, they don't, the toenails used to be more sensitive because the irritability of the way that the nail rubs against the side of the toe, it cuts into the toe and that gets red and irritated. That's less irritation because the inflammation in the body is lower without sugar. Everything is lower, lower sugar, but it's lower inflammation. Now, you're not going to convince an addict who wants sugar. They're never going to listen to any of it. Nobody's going to listen to it if they don't desire to give up sugar. You know, they're not going to. And I mean, if they're addicted to sugar, even if they desire to give up sugar, if their addiction to sugar is going to win the argument until they can finally understand why they have to do it. That's the thing about addiction. So don't try to convince an addict, like it says there in Proverbs 27 and 22, even if you should pound the foolish one, fine, with a pestle and a mortar, in among cracked grain, his foolishness will not depart from him. You can't convince an addict either. It's like a foolish one. You can't convince an addict to give up their habit. So don't try. Very important not to try, because every time you try to convince an addict to give up their habit, you get involved in the addiction. You start to believe that they must be right because they won the argument against you if you don't keep arguing with them. Otherwise, you have to keep arguing endlessly so that they know you don't give up, right? So don't argue with an addict. Very important. That way you can stay away from the addiction. Absolutely crucial, okay? That's one of the most important things I've learned in my life. So I'm sharing that with you because I want you to know that. It doesn't mean you're giving up. You need to say something to that addict that might help them in some way, but if you can. But, I mean, you should try to help them in some way. Try to help point them, steer them maybe. Like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. That idea, right? You could steer them a little bit by explaining that they're not going to see that they're addicted when they're still in the addiction. You could tell them, you could explain that to them, that addicts don't know they're addicted. You could explain that to them. Then that might help them when they finally get out of the addiction. They'll realize possibly that what you said was accurate, and they'll realize that they were addicted more easily if you give them a little bit of help like that. But you can't tell them not to be addicted. You can't tell them to quit. It's for one thing, it's wrong, because you need to give them their free will. You need to allow them free will. If you want to have free will, you have to allow others free will. That's a very important principle that's the principle that I'm actually talking about. But it's the same as this principle it's very similar, at least it's related to the principle about not pounding the foolish one fine, not trying to, you know, destroy the foolish ones with words or whatever, or trying, you know, it's just a waste of time. Well, it just won't work. You can decide how much of a waste of time it is, but it will not benefit them or you. It'll probably hurt you more than it will benefit them. So you need to exercise wisdom in the application of all of these principles. The Proverbs are all there for a reason, to help you. They're not there to demand that you do things. Proverbs are there to help you, to give you wisdom. It's wonderful that it talks about the goat's milk for the food. So milk is important for food. It says right there, Proverbs 27:27. There it is, 27:27, Proverbs. Goat's milk for your food. Amazing. It's amazing. It really is. So because of that scripture, partly, I started to eat goat's milk at some point. I would be using goat's milk all the time, except it doesn't keep long enough compared to the cream that I buy. I can get cream and I can keep it in the fridge a lot longer. The goat's milk, it only keeps maybe 2 weeks, maybe a little more than that, but it keeps a long time compared to cow's milk. It actually keeps longer than cow's milk, typically, but because it usually exceeds its expiry date, or very often it does. But that doesn't mean that it keeps long enough, because I don't want to go shopping even that often. I don't want to have to go out every 2 weeks, for one thing. That's probably the main reason, actually. That's probably the main reason that I don't. And you know what else? I just realized something else. You know how the calcium was making my throat squeaky? Or my voice was squeaky because of what it did to my throat when I ate dairy? That's not happening anymore. I just realized that. So the sugar could have been causing that, because it was inflaming the tissue again. That could have been sugar. Well, see, I haven't experienced that at all since I've stopped the sugar. That's incredible. That's amazing. That's mind-boggling stuff. It's just, it's like, you know, that movie Quest for Fire, where that was not an accurate description of what happened, probably, because it's not, you know, there's no evidence that evolution actually occurred. That's just a theory that can't be demonstrated in the laboratory. See, that's why it's called a theory of evolution, because they can't demonstrate that evolution has ever occurred. They're doing fruit fly experiments, and I saw labs at Queen's University. We actually were in the labs when we did the Queen's University physical plant survey of the university. We were documenting all the breakers turning on and off and so on in all the buildings. So we had to go into the fruit fly labs where they were doing the experiments on fruit flies. They do experiments on fruit flies because fruit flies produce a new generation every 14 days, something like that. So, you know, they're able to study generations and see whether there are any useful mutations. And they've never demonstrated with any experiments, even though they could study things like fruit flies, they could study multiple generations over a long period of time. Every 14 days, a new generation. They can study many, many hundreds of generations, that means, right? During the course of like 100 times 14, 1,400 days is like 4 years. In 4 years' time, they could study 100 generations. So in 16 years, 400 generations of fruit flies. They've never observed any evidence of evolution in the lab. That's why it's called the theory of evolution, because there's no proof of it. But this movie, Quest for Fire, where the man in the movie was like, you know, he was excited. His mind was boggled by the discovery of fire. But that's probably not how it happened, maybe. But the first time you see anything that's technological, it just boggles your mind. Like, or my nutritional discoveries, it's not technological. It's a discovery of how the body works, which is understanding something new about how physiology works in the human body. That's amazing. That to me is mind-boggling, that I can now know that sugar is causing all these issues. I mean, it's just absolutely startlingly staggering in its magnitude. I'm scratching my head. I feel like this is the only thing I can do is go, well, what am I going to, it's just mind-boggling. I don't know what else to do with my hands. It's like, I mean, seriously, it is mind-boggling what bad sugar can do to you, what bad things sugar does. They're monumentally huge. The magnitude is staggering.
the bad things that sugar does if it's abused, which is, means eating too much of it or eating any of it. As far as processed sugar, don't eat processed sugar because it's addictive. I don't think you can stop. It's not, in some ways, I think it's probably, it may not have the same withdrawal symptoms as some other substances like maybe heroin and things like that. They might have worse withdrawal symptoms. I'm not sure which is worse or better, but everyone's different too. But I think it's subtle. The sugar addiction is subtle, and that makes it more likely that you'll fall into it and become addicted to sugar. Sugar's everywhere. Fortunately, we don't have heroin everywhere. In most places, we don't see heroin all over the... It's not in our cupboards and everywhere. We don't have heroin as a temptation. But, I mean, not that we would find it tempting necessarily, but I think if we're looking for some kind of... If we're using our body to get... or trying to escape from our problems and pain in life, that's when people become tempted by narcotics and things like that, or just people who are... Well, I think that's the main reason. If we're happy and very busy and enjoying our lives, we're not likely to be subject to temptation or to be tempted by anything like drugs, you know, anything like narcotics. But just because something's not a narcotic doesn't mean it's not potentially bad, extremely bad and dangerous and potentially addictive, but also something that's not a food, like even just these over-the-counter medications, even if you take a tiny bit of that into your body, now you no longer know what's happening in your body, because you've not... There could be things happening there that will take years to undo, because you've introduced a foreign chemical that wasn't supposed to be there. So that's, I mean, even it will take forever. You'll never know if your body's the same again. That's why, yeah, that's what I want to talk about. Yes, 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 yes. You know how people say, well, someone's once a cheater, always a cheater? That's what people say, right? And yeah, I think everybody understands why people reason that way. But see, that's completely different from the Christian idea. Your sins can be forgiven, and you can actually come to be a new person in Christ. That's a new idea for some people. They've never accepted that idea. That's why they think once a cheater, always a cheater, right? Once a sinner, always a sinner. Once a drug addict, always a drug addict. Well, that may be true for alcoholism too. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. But in the case of drug addicts and alcoholics, we can still be addicted to, or addictive in our personality, but we can avoid those substances simply by continually praying about it, or by, even without prayer, you can call it prayer or call it meditation. You can meditate. You can be completely convinced, persuaded, and committed to avoiding a certain substance or all non-food substances or whatever. You can be persuaded, committed. You can be committed to avoiding certain substances, right? And that doesn't... Now, that's like prayer. You're committed to it. So you're continually telling Jehovah. But if you're not a believer, you're telling yourself. You're telling that part of yourself that constitutes God, a God-like influence in your life. If you do that, you can... If you're willing to die rather than take that substance, then you can be in the presence of other people who are using that substance, and you're not going to use it because you're willing to die rather than use that substance. And you can be like that and commit yourself to doing it for the rest of your life, to being free of that substance. You can pray about that, say, Jehovah, please help me to be free from any mood-altering substance, any intoxicating substance. You can make a long list of what you want to be free of and pray in Jesus' name. And you can repeat that prayer as often as you need to. You can, some days you might have to repeat it over and over and over until the temptation passes. But you can be free of anything that way. You can be free of any sin that you can think of by becoming committed to making that choice in your life, and making a vow to Jehovah is what you can do. You can make a vow to Jehovah to be free of that for the rest of your life. So this idea about once a cheater, always a cheater, that's not true at all. That's completely false. It's a false idea. That's just not true. I mean, these people who have that viewpoint, they think in their minds that they've never sinned either. That's another thing. The characteristic of somebody who says, once a sinner, always a sinner, they're the kind of person who thinks they've never sinned. They're not aware of their own sin, is what they're saying. That's what that says. They must be people who believe that they've never done anything wrong. That's why if they see someone else who's done something wrong, they feel threatened because they feel that they have no self-control. If they were to do something wrong, they wouldn't be able to stop themselves. So they are so perfect in their own eyes that they can't forgive the mistake of someone else. They can't understand how somebody could make a mistake and then repent from it. Or then change their mind, or then become aware of it as a mistake and decide not to do it. They can't. Now, I understand that when you do make a mistake, like an alcoholic becomes addicted, it's not only a mistake, they also have a propensity to be addicted. I understand that when an alcoholic takes that first, endeavor, starts to drink, embarks on that, drinking journey, that they're more likely to do it again. I mean, the first time is the indication that, especially for alcoholics and drug addicts, that they're going to do it again, and that but it's not a guarantee at all. It's not true at all. And just because you know that somebody has, I mean, first of all, these things shouldn't be public anyway. For the most part, you shouldn't be publicizing somebody else's mistakes unless you want your mistakes to be published. You can publish your own mistakes, but you shouldn't be publishing other people's mistakes. That's ridiculous. Do you want your laundry aired in public? I mean, everybody's got dirty laundry, literally. So why would you do that? That's extremely self-righteous and it shows a lack of compassion for the fact that everybody's got a different upbringing. But everybody makes mistakes, even if the mistake is, think of a mistake that you made. Think of any mistake you've ever made in your life. Do you want someone to say, he made that mistake once, he's going to keep doing that? Is that what you want people to think about you? If you don't want people to think that about you, then you shouldn't be thinking that about other people. It's very simple. I mean, if you've just, done something wrong in terms of anything you can think of that you've done wrong, what would it be? I don't know. It's absurd to think about anything that you've done wrong. I remember I stopped at a red light. A policeman interpreted it. I mean, what happened? There was a red light. I think it was a yellow light. There was a light about to change, okay? It was green. I'm trying to think what the situation was. Something happened. It was a very unusual circumstance. It was turning yellow. It was yellow, and I decided I would turn right or whatever I was doing at that intersection. The policeman interpreted that as not being cautious enough or something. So I got a ticket for that. So how would you like it if you went... if you got a ticket for a traffic offense, first of all, you don't even know, right? You don't even know. When somebody's accused of cheating, you don't know the whole story. You don't know their side of it. You know, that's the other thing. We never hear the other side of the person who is accused of cheating because it's like, the people can never understand the viewpoint of the person who is accused of doing these things because there are people who don't
have the ability to understand that viewpoint. So you can't share that with them without them drawing the wrong conclusions entirely. So the person who's accused of cheating, I'm just going to call them that. I'm not going to call anyone a cheater, but the person who's accused of cheating is always in a position where they can't tell the whole story. So it's wrong to judge them when you can never know the story. You can never know it. Because even if you've got two cheaters, let's say well, we're all cheaters. I mean, that's the truth of it, because we're all sinners. We're all cheaters. We're all sinners in every way, just in magnitude or in perception of magnitude. Everybody's a cheater. Everyone's a sinner. So you got two cheaters. One can never understand the other one's guilt or innocence or motivation or any of it. So there's no point in accusing each other. But the problem I find, the big problem with the cheating issue, I have big issues with this, and it's to do with this chess scandal that's come up recently. But I have big issues with the cheating thing because, I mean, the whole curious thing about it, okay, the curious thing is that, and it's the most important aspect of it, is it's a game, right? Okay. It's a game. And there's this idea they call fairness, right? It's like fairness. And they define fairness as not using a chess engine. That's fairness, right? You don't cheat by using an engine. That's called fairness. But everyone uses engines when they're not playing. I mean, so there's this weird paradox going on. Everyone has to use engines in order to keep up with the latest advances in chess knowledge. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to say that someone's cheating because they're using an engine, because everyone's using engines when they're not playing. So this idea of fairness is a nonsensical concept in a way. And I'm not saying, I mean, the reason I think it's nonsensical is because they would have you believe if you don't use an engine, you're fair. But when you don't use an engine, guess what? You don't play as well. And that's supposed to be fair. So they would want, they're telling you, instead of wanting the best chess to be played, they want something less than the best, and they call that fair. And that's called a game. I don't know what the game is there. Like, that's a weird kind of idea for a game, if you can't use the best technology in the game. But, I mean, I realize they're trying to say, well, you're pitting your mind, human mind against human mind. I understand that aspect. I understand the concept of it. But, I also understand that chess tournaments can make their own rules. I mean, they can say whatever they want. They can make whatever rules they want. So, but the problem here is, I think there's a fine line here between when you use an engine and when you don't use an engine. And I mean, I don't think anyone's using an engine. Well, they could be, but when you look at when you analyze the games and so on, you can't, if somebody, I just don't get it. I don't see how, if somebody plays well and then they play poorly and then they play well and poorly, you could say they're cheating, because when they played well, they must have been cheating, because, you know, but people have sparks of brilliance in any endeavor, right? I mean, so that's just wrong. And, you know, it's not like Hans Niemann has played extremely well all the time at all. He's not doing that. I think it's rather curious that, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. Like, it's, All we know is, up till now, there's no proof of any wrongdoing. If that's, or up till at some point, maybe at some point that won't be true, but up till some point, there's no evidence of wrongdoing. If you're looking for wrongdoing, though, you're going to find a lot of wrongdoing in anybody. I don't care who you're looking for it. I don't care in whom you're looking for it. I mean, there's wrongdoing. It's just a waste of time looking for wrongdoing, because you're not. So the problem is got to do with the perception of the rules and how to enforce them, or who enforces the rules. if the players are enforcing the rules, then they're not players anymore. They're enforcers. I mean, that's another part of it. The whole problem is the idea of a game. It's a game. And if it's a game and you don't like if you don't like the game, quit. Quit the game. Like, don't complain about the players. That's the only answer to that situation. Just quit the game. Like, you obviously don't want it to be a game. If you're saying it has to be fair, then it's not a game anymore. Any game that I've ever played, there's always unfairness because everyone interprets the rules differently. There's always cheaters. Like, if you play hockey on the street, which we always did, with a tennis ball and a hockey stick and whatever, and a net, we would play. But there were always players who didn't follow the rules. We all followed basically the same rules, which there weren't that many rules, I guess. But, we weren't doing a lot of... It's not like there were... What am I saying here? That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. I mean, at some point, you decide you're not going to play that game anymore. Whether it's because you don't like the way that some people are, interpreting the rules, or you might score a goal and somebody says, well, that wasn't a goal, it didn't cross the goal line, they might disagree. If everybody disagrees with your perception of what happens all the time, if you're always the one who's wrong, even though you know you're not wrong, you're going to quit. Obviously, you shouldn't be playing the game, right? I mean, that kind of thing is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, hockey players who are hurting each other physically. That's not what I'm talking about. But anyway, if you consider, it's just a question of the rules understood. When you understand the rules better than other people, then you shouldn't be playing the game. That's the problem. Because it's not a game for you anymore. Because you know the rules better than they do. So it's not a game for you, like it is for them. For you, it's more than a game compared to how they see it. That's the issue, right? I mean, so it's the whole idea of a game is the problem. It's either a game or it's serious. It can't be both at the same time. It's a game. Anyway. So that's why I don't like games, which have winners and losers, and I don't like fiction, right? Works of fiction. I used to like them years ago. I used to like games. I used to like works of fiction. But works of fiction like The Lord of the Rings and that kind of thing, the problem with it is there's enough interesting things in real life. There's enough interesting things in true history of our human race, human, family. There's enough mystery in reality. We don't need fiction. Actually, we don't need fiction at all. Because there are many, many things that are really interesting to study. Like if we study history, we can learn that people in Bible days were not that different from us. They had wheat beer, they had intoxicating liquor, they had wine. Who knew all these things, right? They had things they called sorcery. Probably that has to do with, smoking or something, whatever, something like that. They probably had all kinds of things, or taking drugs. I mean, taking substances would be another sorcerer's thing. Any kind of, eating or smoking things would be, that were not food. You don't smoke food anyway. I'm just saying smoking something or eating something that's not food would be a form of sorcery. So those things existed way back, long before Jesus. We're not saying it's only in Jesus' day, but in Bible times, way back, all the way since the beginning, these things have been around. These are not new things. Just because they have new devices, like, the new vaping devices and all this kind of thing, that doesn't mean there's anything new about it. None of these things are new. A lot of the problems in the world are people don't want to take things seriously enough. They don't see their actions as having a bearing on their life and death. Like, they don't think that something they eat today could lead to their death in 50 years' time. They don't think about that, right? But nor do they realize that eating really, really good things, the right thing, eating the right things now can lead to their intense happiness right now, and it can lead to magnificent health in the present day, but right now. and powerful energy. And, you know, even in old age, a person can be vigorous in old age, like even Moses was. Right up until he was 120 years old, he was vigorous in energy. He had energy right up to the end of his life. And so, and the idea of everlasting life is that, you know, even Moses was a sinner. That's why he died. He didn't do everything perfectly or not well enough to live forever. And we inherited sin from Adam. So even if we did, you know, we're doing the best we can, but we have imperfection built into us because of the sin of Adam and his choice that he made. That led to inherited sin. So we need Christ to get us out of that by paying that debt, by having a perfect man who didn't sin die as paying the full price that Adam should have paid for his sin. But Adam couldn't pay it because when he died, by the time he died, he was imperfect because he'd already sinned. So the idea of Jesus was needed as a sacrifice to ransom the first man. By ransoming the first man, we ransom all of mankind. We pay the debt for all of mankind. That means through Jesus we have everlasting life. That is the teaching of the Bible. And that's the teaching of everlasting life. So it's Ward Green. It's September 27th. We know what day that is, some of us. September 27th, 16:03 hours, 2022. And I hope you have a wonderful day. And I hope you have a lovely, lovely endeavor, whatever you're endeavoring to do. And goodbye for now. Have a great praise of the true God in your endeavors. And praise Jehovah. Bye for now.